I'm Nathan.
And I'm Emily. And this is Twice as Less Not Perfect,
a messy marriage podcast. We're here to get real with you about the fun and the flaws,
the grief and the gratitude,
the mirth and the myth of marriage.
We all know that partnerships are powerful, but they're also pretty messy. And getting to the good stuff can take a lot of trial and error.
So join us while we talk about our mistakes and the lessons we've learned about relationships.
So far.
Because it's not always perfect.
But it's usually worth it. Welcome.
Hello, everyone.
Here we are on a very special Twice as Less Not Perfect.
It's the Vow of Silence episode.
That's right. So we thought it might be a wonderful exercise for the next hour if we practice silence with you.
Ready? Here's what it sounds like.
It's the ASMR episode. Just kidding. Can you imagine if we did a full hour of nothing?
That would be terrible.
It'd be like, I feel like our podcast sometimes feels like Seinfeld, where it's just like
a show about nothing
and everything at the same time.
Sometimes.
But it's kind of ironic that our topic today is all about silence.
Yeah.
Given that by nature, a podcast is all about talking.
And by our nature, we are two very talkative people.
We're pretty chatty.
Yeah. We have a lot of words for a lot of things.
So you can imagine how challenging it was for mm-hmm. us to take 24 hours together without saying a single GD word.
GD.
I know. I never say that.
For the Christians.
We did a vow of silence
yeah,
day.
For a full 24 hours.
I mean, more if you count the sleeping on either end.
Yeah, that's true. So it was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And the reason that we decided to do this, besides the fact that it's ironic and we were like, what should we do for our podcast next week? we had just finished, we were on a road trip and we were listening to an audiobook of Esther Perel's Mating in Captivity, which is an amazing book.
Yeah. Esther Perel is this incredible psychologist, and we've talked about her and quoted her in past episodes. Yeah. She has this great podcast. This book, highly recommend
it. It's awesome. It really is all about how in relationships, can we have stability and passion at the same time? Or do they automatically have to, do we have to automatically sacrifice one for the other? And in that book, there was this whole section about communication and how the first language is the language of the body, right? And when you think about that, I think that's so important to always remember. You know, we've been using spoken language and words for only thousands of years.
Yeah, not too long.
Right? In the grand scheme of things, not too long. But we've been using body language as a means of communication much, much longer in our history as a species.
And we continue to use it, mm-hmm. but we're less conscious of it.
Yeah.
Because we're focused primarily on the spoken language.
It's why they say things like, do your power poses and if you mirror people's body language as like an old sales technique, like those things are real. And that's because those are things about us as a species that are really deep down in there. And so she was talking about how in relationships, especially anytime we're talking about communication, we're talking about the spoken word. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the few realms, I think, in the world and Western civilization, especially, where it's a very gendered to the benefit of the female.
Yeah.
Right. Not in all cases.
Yeah.
But
I love what she said in that section of the book where mm-hmm. she talks about why women have highly developed communication skills. You know, in a primarily patriarchal society, mm-hmm. we've had to learn how to develop strong relationships in different ways besides just sort of saying, I want this. go here now. You know, it's become very complex and nuanced and intuitive, and it's developed as a necessity.
Yeah.
But in that regard, when we talk about communication and relationships, it can often feel very one-sided.
Yeah.
And frustrating on the part of both partners, particularly if it's a male-female relationship.
Yeah, it can put men at a big disadvantage in terms of communication. If the only mode of communication we're talking about in relationships is the verbal, you know, we're not talking about the physical and the truth that our bodies speak. We're only really getting some of the conversation. We're not really focusing on the full conversation.
Yeah, or there's like a disconnect too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've definitely felt that where it's like one thing is being said to me, but it doesn't feel right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of it is picking up on body language cues that are hard to interpret.
Yeah.
So
we'd had like this big, long, you know, holiday trip and the stress of the holidays, very busy. You know, and we thought, wouldn't it be cool to just try this for a day and actually spend a day at home together, not saying a word? And what will it be like? And what will be hard? What will be easy? And just to see what we would learn. So in this, we're going to talk about what our experience was like in hopes that we can encourage a different type of conversation. We're all about having good communication and talking with your partner and expressing yourself and speaking your truth and all those things.
Yeah.
But there's another side of it that we also need to consider. So what were our ground rules?
Okay. So there was no speaking of any kind to each other, but also to our pets.
Right.
Which I think
they were confused.
They were confused. I think they were a little concerned. I don't think I realized how much we talked to them until that day.
We're losers.
Our animals are our friends. and really not, you know, chatting with anybody. We happened to, if we went outside for a walk or whatever, not really stopping to chat.
Yeah.
It was like a vow of silence.
Right.
What else?
We were not able to text each other.
Correct.
Or write anything down. Like we couldn't like do the old scribble pad and just be like write notes, show them to each other. None of that. And
we kind of steered away from things like charades, you know? Yeah. I mean, we gestured some, but we really didn't. We tried not to attach physicality to words specifically.
Mm-hmm. We didn't too much. We didn't watch TV.
Yeah,
we didn't play video games or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So we didn't kind of have any other spoken word going on outside of that.
Externally.
Right. Music that had lyrics, things like that.
Yeah, we didn't do that. But we read, we could read, and we could journal.
Right.
Which felt very internal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was kind of our ground rules to start. And as a way to kind of think about our, I think, overall takeaway from this, kind of what we realized as we went through this, this quote Emily found from Mozart is that he said, "The music is not in the notes, but the silence in between." And I love that quote.
Such
a good quote.
I use that sometimes, not the quote specifically, but just that concept in my voice lessons of like, don't ignore those pauses. They're very important and they're there for a reason. I do think it's ironic that Mozart said that since he wrote so many notes.
But the more notes you write, the more space you have in between them.
Sure.
That's just math.
That makes perfect sense.
That's just math. And I love that, you know, if you ever been in a concert and that experience of like the beat drop and that the tension that builds to the beat drop, there's like those moments in music where there's that pause before everyone comes in together. That's such like a big unifying moment. That's one of those things that just like brings people just in together all at the same time. And I think there's a reason for that
definitely.
Moment of silence captures us.
It's a moment that we're all experiencing at the exact same time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's collective and it's everybody's present. I did this I did this play last year that got canceled because of COVID, but it was about a silent yoga retreat. And for some reason, I never did this exercise in my own life outside of rehearsal. I spent a lot of time analyzing what it's like to communicate without words, but it was all acting. So it didn't, I don't think it really, I don't know. I did not have the aha experience doing a play about being in silence versus doing the actual thing.
Actually being in silence.
Actually doing it and just being. And so, when we were sort of doing our recap of how the day went the next day.
Yeah.
It was just like fireworks. Oh my gosh. Moments.
So
left
much.
And right, constantly. It was, I was so surprised at what I learned.
Yeah,
from
we
this.
Had a good 2-hour conversation of just really deep dive into like what we notice, what we are experiencing, and mm-hmm. what this vow of silence was like. So
we're going to share that.
We're
going to
share
you.
That with you now. So I think the biggest thing I think right away was just eye contact mm-hmm. and physical cues that we are engaging in. And I had a big aha moment with that because I realized how often I hear you speaking, but I'm not connecting with like the words you're saying, mm-hmm. right? And when we are having this vow of silence, when you were trying to get my attention, you would lock eyes with me. And also a lot of times you would like touch me. You would like reach out and like grab my, like touch my shoulder or my leg to like make sure that I was paying attention to you.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about that. It's like how often in our life you are speaking to me and it just doesn't register. Mm-hmm. I'm somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And that moment of touch would just like lock me in.
Yeah.
And I think that was a big takeaway for me. It's like, wow, like when you really want my attention, it's as simple as like touch my shoulder. And it like snaps me out of it because right. I don't even know. I'm not even aware that I'm not in it.
Right.
Sometimes we're just talking at each other. Yeah. We talk to ourselves. It's not always clear when you're being spoken to.
Yeah.
When you're in a house with two very talkative people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that took me a few hours into the day, into the experience to learn mm-hmm. that I needed to do that because sometimes you would communicate something to me mm-hmm. and I'd try to respond, but you had already moved on. and I was like, I thought we were communicating.
I'd like wave and leave the room.
You didn't even wave. You would just move on. And so I'd have to, you'd turn your back and finish whatever you were doing,
uh-huh.
like the dishes or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And so I'd have to, I don't know, I'd kind of gesture
wildly
as you were disengaging. And so then I'd have to like, stop, mm-hmm. touch you, make contact
yeah.
somehow with your shoulder, with your leg, and then you would be there. But that was a big takeaway for me too.
Yeah.
Because I feel like so often I say words to you that you sometimes respond.
I sometimes respond.
But you don't
but
really
I did not hear.
Hear it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was a early thing I think throughout the day. That became a necessity, mm-hmm. but then it became kind of eye-opening in that way. And on the same side of that, you brought up the fact that you just became more aware of not when I was trying to communicate you with you, but just my gestures, my actions, yeah. my facial expressions
yeah.
in
so
general.
I noticed that I was way more in tune with your physicality in general. Particularly when you weren't trying to communicate with me. Mm-hmm. Just little things, like you'd shrug your shoulders kind of impishly, and I got a cue that you were pleased with something that had just happened, or, you know, a little smile, or whatever. I was way more in tune with those things and paying attention. And that was interesting, particularly when you weren't actually doing it for my benefit.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it became easier as the day went on to track your sort of emotional journey of that day mm-hmm. when you weren't trying to communicate it to me. You just, yeah, just watching you go about the day, you got a sense of she's having a good time. She's having a good day. Like, this is going well. There's a moment of frustration here. Like, mm-hmm. all of those things became apparent just from the out, like from an outside view, which was really interesting. I think we spend so much time stating how we feel and asking how the other feels. Mm-hmm. And so you get in the habit of that. So you're just not paying attention to how that person feels.
Yeah. And we'll get more into that sort of checking in and asking how the other person's doing. Mm-hmm. We'll get into that more because that was really fascinating. I did find it really challenging along those lines of like checking in because I'm the one, I always check in. Are you doing okay? How are things? What do you need? Do you like this? Do you want to eat? all of that stuff. And I found that it was just not easy to ask questions.
Yeah.
It wasn't easy unless I feel like I cheated, you know, and I didn't want to be explicit about, you know, is this cutting board that we just got for Christmas for vegetables or meat?
This was like the most absurd pantomime of the day to recreate. Emily, like,
I was preparing grapefruit for breakfast. And I pull out this new cutting board that we got from Nate's parents, which thank you, Eric and Mary Beth. And I didn't know, I knew he'd used one already. I didn't know if he'd used it for meat or for vegetables. And I was trying to figure out which was which to keep them separate. And I was asking him,
physically, holds up the grapefruit and the cutting board. And I was like, yes, grapefruit. And then she was like, cutting board, and pulls out like a package of like sausages. And I was like, no, I don't want sausage and grapefruit. I was like,
you said yes.
Like, I didn't know what you were asking me. I was like, those are sausages. And no, I don't want them with my grapefruit. I don't know what's going on.
And I can see how you thought I was asking if you wanted sausage. I was like,
no, I don't want sausage and grapefruit. That's a terrible meal combination.
So I was just like, never mind. I'm going to get an old cutting board, one that I know is for non-meat products. Yeah, but there were a few of those, and it only took two or three where I was like, you know, it's just not worth it. Let's just not, if he's upset about something, he'll let me know somehow.
I'll make it known.
And it was so freeing to me to not feel like, not only did I not have to check in, but I couldn't really.
Yeah.
And it led to more decisiveness on my part. Like later we went out for a walk and I asked physically if he wanted to run, and he kind of said, yeah. And so I just started, and there was a brief moment where I thought, oh, is this bad? His knee's been acting up lately. Maybe I should check in. And I was like, well, if he wants to stop, he'll stop. I didn't stress about it too much. It was like a fleeting thing. And I'm the kind of person that stresses hardcore about how everybody else is doing.
Right.
To the point where I can't enjoy myself at all.
Yeah.
And I just felt like that burden was just lifted for the day.
Yeah.
That was hugely unexpected.
And it's really helpful because I think about the amount of time we spend overanalyzing very simple decisions.
Yeah.
Right? Do you want to go for a run? Well, how long would it be? Well, how far would it be? What's the temperature? What's this? What's that?
Yeah.
All of these like ridiculous overanalyzations of a very simple question. Do you want to run or not?
Yes or no.
Yes or no. And normally I would have asked questions like, well, I have to check my knee. And I mean, are you cold? Are you
warm enough? What do you want to do?
What do you want to do? Ugh. And she was just like, gestures running. And I was like nodding. And then off we went. And then when it's time to stop running, I stopped running. And that was that. And it was really nice because it just led to more, like you said, decisiveness. We weren't having to go this exhausting back and forth.
It's so exhausting, and I don't think I realized how exhausting it is until that day when we were lacking that.
Yeah, it's like
how much more open I was to just experiencing a pleasant day.
Yeah.
Alongside you.
Yeah, you didn't have to, we didn't have to dive into the deep details and like parse every little thing out for every decision because it was too difficult. So you just had to go with it. You know, it was really nice.
Here's another thing I didn't miss.
Oh.
Tone.
What do you mean?
Subtext.
Oh.
All those complicated things when you say words, but you mean different words.
What Emily means is my tone.
No, I do it too.
So
I definitely do it.
I hear you because I felt like you were so happy with me all day. And I was like, what's going on? And I realized, I was like, because I've said nothing. And I, you know, if you listen to an earlier episode, I was talking about how I really want to try to like cut down on my like negativity and not being so judgmental. And like the number one way that comes across is in my tone. And I don't mean to do it. And so I literally couldn't. Like there was no judgment because I wasn't saying words that were just layered and loaded with, you know, a relationship's worth of, you know.
Let me ask you.
Background.
Yeah. Let me ask you, were you thinking certain judgmental thoughts? No.
No. And I think that was really interesting too.
I
find oftentimes when I give you attitude, I'm not thinking in those terms.
Really?
A lot of times I'm not. It just,
I feel like that's where tone comes from.
It comes out.
It comes from your inner thoughts being made clear through your tone.
No, I did not feel
okay. A
feeling of, you know, judgment or...
Maybe it's because I wasn't saying anything either.
Maybe.
Maybe we've hit on something. We
should
just
not talk to each other ever. Ever again.
Do you feel like early in our relationship we would see like couples not talking to each other, that he'd clearly been together for a while and kind of judging them.
I'd be like, what's that about? Like, do they even like each
other? I never want to be like that.
Now we're like, maybe they're on to something.
Life goals to me.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just nice because so often our, and going back to that idea of the idea of silence, like the Trappists monks had this idea that body language and silence is something of the future. It's a mystery. It's the mystery of what's to come. But words are the moment in the world because it's the way we communicate with the world. And if you think about that in terms of when you're communicating verbally, not only are you communicating the words you say, but oftentimes you're very much in the moment with how you're feeling. Someone asks you a question, and if you're busy with something else, your response is quick or curt or has a bit of an edge to it because you're distracted or you're not focused or you feel annoyed that you're being pulled away from what you were doing. And that translates to that. And I thought that was interesting when I was like looking up vows of silence. That was something that like the Trappist monks talked about, is that when we're in the moment, our words can become too glib. We don't think about them. We don't think about the way we say them. We don't think about our response to the words that just came because we're just back and forth real quick.
They're not intentional.
Yeah, they're not intentional, exactly. Yeah. And I think that absence of tone for an entire day was really, really helpful because I think it just cleared out some of that like negative energy that we just bring to situations for no reason.
Yeah.
Doesn't need to be there.
Right.
You just bring it in because you're just reacting in these little micro moments.
Well, and to connect also that we've talked before about my habit of putting everything into a blender, about how I, you know, I'll see a dirty dish in the sink and think, well, this isn't just one dirty dish in the sink right now. This is all the dirty dishes that have ever been left there, you know, compiled. And I tend to connect all of these things and not let certain things go and just throw it all in the blender. Like I throw all the fruits in, all the dirty dishes, and I blend it up and I just see all of it at once. And I'm not sure how or why, but I didn't feel that
right
at all
that day. And what's interesting is all the things that you would normally like ask me to do got done.
Yeah.
I feel like it's, what's interesting is it's twofold. I got them done as I was coming across them, you know. I didn't like sit down that day and say like this today, because we're not talking, I have to do these things that I know Emily would like by this time. It wasn't like that. It was right. Very much like I'd be doing something and I'd be like, ah, there's some dishes. I'll do some of those dishes. Mm-hmm. And then I was like writing in my journal about something and it made me think about something else. And then I was like, thought about the cats and I was like, oh, I got to do the litter box. And I ran downstairs to do that. All of it got done and you never had to ask me.
Right.
And I never felt like it was being asked of me.
Right. Here's two things that I think about that. One, on my part, I feel like because we were silent and because I knew that I wouldn't be able to ask you those things, mm-hmm. I didn't expect it to get done.
Mm.
So the pressure was sort of off. It wasn't on my mind. I was not expecting anything. So then when it happened, it was this amazing, wonderful, attentive surprise. And then the second thing is, and it's more of a question for you,
uh-huh.
is, did you feel like the absence of the distraction of language made you more aware of the things that needed to be done?
Ooh, yes. Like there was just more stillness. You know, when you're spend all your time talking, and I'm very talkative, and my mind's all over the place. My mind is racing all the time, all over the place. I get distracted really easily. And I was just sitting in sort of stillness. And so it was a lot easier to like look around and be like, well, I've been quiet for 8 hours now. I've read, I'm tired of reading. What should I do next? And like literally we could look around and be like, I could do that. That'll take 5 minutes at least. And then I can figure out what the next thing is. And so it was a really, I did feel more aware of my space.
Would you say you were prompted to do some of those things because of your awareness of the need to do them? Or were you searching for things to do?
Both.
Okay.
I think there were certain things I just kind of came across and was like, oh, that's a thing. I should just do that right now. There are other times where I was like, what should I do for the next 10 minutes?
Right.
You know, we had figured out that we were going out at like a certain time.
Yes.
And so it was like, there was like a half hour before we had to like get ready for that. And I was like, what can I do for the next half hour? Because I'm tired of sitting here reading this book. And so I just like went around the house and did random little things.
Yeah,
you know? That's so it was great. A combination of the two, I think.
I definitely felt that made me think of the idea that the way time sort of behaves and how time is so malleable.
Yeah.
And it felt like that day was very long and not
enough. Yeah.
At times I was like, oh my God, I'm so bored. But other times I thought, this is so leisurely.
Yeah.
And wonderful. And 10 minutes feels so luxurious
mm-hmm.
when you just aren't so distracted. Everything's just simpler.
Yeah. And we didn't spend, you know, we didn't really do much different than we would on a normal Saturday mm-hmm. in terms of the things we actually did.
Particularly in COVID life.
Yeah. There was an amazing moment where we had eaten dinner. It was like 7:30 and we usually go to bed at like midnight and we like both looked at the clock and we were like, oh my God. Like we made this big gesture like, what the hell are we going to do now? We watched Fantasia 2000 because it was music.
We figured it wasn't cheating if it was just music and pictures. So, so also... this brings me to think about the idea of, because you were talking about noticing things mm-hmm. and getting stuff done around the house, like anticipating needs.
Yes.
And certainly the needs of the home. But you did a lot of great things in terms of, I would say, deeds,
mm-hmm.
anticipating my needs.
Tell the people about it.
Well, we had agreed at some point earlier in the day that we would go out at the warmest part of the day
mm-hmm.
for a walk.
Yeah.
And I assumed it was a walk around the neighborhood like we normally take, nothing special. But over the last couple weeks, we've been talking about this one particular spot we wanted to go to and had never been. And we live close to it and just never went. And so we left the house for our walk. And I thought, okay, we're going to walk around the neighborhood. And I noticed he had grabbed our water bottles. He'd filled them both up and grabbed them. And I was like, okay, something's different here. he also grabbed the car keys. So I noticed that. And then we got in the car and he drove the way that we typically go to one of our favorite walking spots, Stanley Lake. And then we passed that turn. And that's when I knew for sure we were going to Patridge. We were going to this new spot. So I thought that was really cool. So it was a fun surprise that he'd prepared. And he brought the water. And I remember thinking, well, it's sunny, but I'm worried I'm going to be too cold out there. It's really exposed. Maybe it's windy. And I remember thinking in my head, I hope he brought my gloves because I didn't bring my gloves. And we got there, we pulled up, and it was under cloud cover, so it was a little chilly, and I was like, this is going to be fun no matter what. And he reaches, what, into the back seat?
Into my best pocket,
and you pull out my gloves and hand them to me.
Yeah.
It was the most amazing thing.
And it was just like that moment of, I really wanted to surprise you. And normally, and I think about like this, when we leave the house, it takes us much longer to leave the house because of the things that you like. You're the gatherer of the things,
yes.
Right? You get the waters. You're getting those things together always, and I'm always the one at the door. Like
often for us
oh
both.
Oh my gosh, let's go! Yes,
but you need less to take with you on your person.
And
than
so
I
do. We're like, I'm gonna surprise her on this hike, but she doesn't know that we're going. So I have to make sure that we have all these things together. And so I like did this scramble around the house to get all those things together because I couldn't tell you and I couldn't ask you what you needed. I couldn't, you know, I just had to be like, I know she's going to want water and I know she's going to want gloves. I actually had a moment where I like checked out your outfit to be like, okay, she's good to go. Because I was like ready to like bring a jacket out or something like that if you like, you know.
I almost didn't.
You know.
I had a down vest on. I almost didn't wear it. And I thought, well, I'll be happier if I'm warmer.
Yeah.
And it was perfect.
Yeah.
And I'm so pleased.
And it's that idea, I think, that in this day, I think we speak a lot of like words of affirmation to each other. We say, I love you a lot. We exchange niceties and pleasantries throughout the day.
Hi, I love you.
Oh, like,
and it starts to lose its meaning a little bit. You know, if you say something over and over again, it starts to feel like it's lost it somehow.
And so this idea of like, I that's where I did feel I needed to focus on. If I can't say I love you today, if I can't do those things, I have to focus on actions over these like niceties, right? It was interesting. I was looking at these things and there was actually a quote by one of the Stoics, Epictetus, talking about talk and how we often just, we say too much, right? And he said, talk but rarely if occasion calls you. But do not talk of ordinary things. And I just love that as an idea of like, we spend so much time just filling uncomfortable silence with nonsense words.
Yeah.
Like nothing substantial, nothing going on.
Or we'll just talk in circles.
Yeah.
We'll talk a point to death.
Right.
It's a real, it's an American thing, would you say? More American than some other?
I don't know.
Maybe it's a Western thing.
Yeah.
I don't really know. I'm making that up. It feels very American.
Yeah.
Americans like to talk. Yeah. my actions came later in the day, I feel like. You did such a good job of just throughout the day doing these little things to make me feel seen.
Uh-huh.
And that was another aha moment for me of like, so often I get so frustrated with you because I feel like you never hear me.
Mm-hmm.
I realized it's not really about being heard. Yes, it's about being heard, but it's about being seen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, take me in. I have something to offer. I have something to communicate. And when I use words, like we were saying earlier, how sometimes you just aren't present for it. I feel unseen. Mm-hmm. And I felt so seen that day.
Yeah.
I did this meditation just as a quick sidebar. That was one. I did a guided meditation. So there were words, but I was meditating. So I didn't feel like it was cheating. But she talked about, it was all about listening to your body.
Yeah.
Not only to your body, but taking in external sounds. If there are sounds around you, take them in and sort of try not to attach any meaning to them, but just sort of hear them and let them go, just like you do with thoughts, your thought patterns. And I found myself very aware of other sounds, you know, not words, obviously, but sounds environmentally throughout the day. Mm-hmm. But just sort of the idea of going internally and, you know, doing a blueprint of your body, taking a flashlight and looking around your mm-hmm. body. But in the sense of, she framed it as listening to your body.
Yeah.
And I like that. I don't know, you know, I felt like in so many ways we were really listening to our own bodies, uh-huh. to our own thoughts, mm-hmm. and to each other's bodies and thoughts, right? That
yeah.
that it's almost easier to know what your truth is, what you really want, if you listen to your body.
Right.
Versus the words in your head.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Well, it's like the idea of speaking truth versus feeling truth.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you can say how you feel, but your body will not lead you astray
yeah.
as to how you feel. And like, the idea that when we are using words, we are filtering. Words are a filter. Our body is not. Our body doesn't have the ability to filter things out like that. It's really yeah. hard, you know. Well, it's like why people have tells, right, when they're poker players, yeah. right? It reads. It's hard to suppress that language. And so often in our words, we are filtering, we are misleading, we're giving it a little twist,
we're covering insecurities. Yeah. I do that a lot. And yeah, and my therapist has been saying for a while, this is in one of our earlier sessions, you know, pay attention to your body language. Mm-hmm. And I sort of kept that in the back of my mind and been like, okay, occasionally I notice when I say something and I do something that conflicts with the thing I've said, mm-hmm. but I'm not horribly in tune with it. And by removing language altogether, I was extremely in tune with it.
Right.
And I can't wait to tell her about it.
Yeah.
Because it was so empowering for me. Because I have such a hard time recognizing what my needs and wants are. Mm-hmm. I spend a lot of time being very concerned with what other people's mm-hmm. needs are and whether I've fulfilled those needs.
Sure.
And so it was so refreshing to just be able to be in tune with it.
And we were in sense of being seen versus being heard too, like it was a little a physical manifestation too, because I assumed that we would spend the majority of the day like bumping into each other, because we bump into each other all the time when we're in a normal day, because we're just talking and we're not paying attention to what's around us. We're just talking. We're in our own heads. And so you turn real quick and you didn't realize the person was behind you and you bump into them. We bumped into each other once very early in the morning, mm-hmm. and then never again. And yeah. we became more aware of where we were in the space. If you were moving quick or fast or slow, if you were backing away, coming toward, like we were just more in tune with like where we were in relationship to each other.
Yeah.
And it made it less complicated.
Yeah.
You know,
it really did.
It made me think of Hamilton. The lyric from the song in Hamilton, you know, in the eye of the hurricane, there's quiet for a moment. And like the whole day just felt like that, you know, coming out of the holidays, going into like the new year, this swirl of
stressful
mess and
holiday
craziness,
travel, but add on COVID and all the stress and guilt
just
of that.
Da, 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 like so hard to switch that mm-hmm. off and tune that out. And then that day was just like, just quiet, and it was still, and it felt like it was the first time I'd been able to think and hear my thoughts and feel my thoughts and feel my body in, God, I don't know how long, right? Yeah. And it took time to get there, you know, but that complication was absent because we had the space and the silence in between the words to figure those things out.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I also was fascinated as an introvert, and this goes back to my need to like make sure everybody's okay and check in, because I was relieved of that.
Yeah.
I felt like I could just be, and because of the silence, I felt like I was recharged that day in a way that I've never felt in the presence of other people before.
Which is so crazy. I was so glad to hear that. Like, it kind of blew my mind when you said that to me, because I've, you know, oftentimes I feel that I have to get out of your space, right?
And that's how I've felt
anywhere near
well.
You, you know, and that you need that to recharge. And so,
but that's been true.
Yeah.
I mean, that's been entirely true.
And was it because of the fact that you knew that I wasn't going to come barging into your space with noise and words and distractions and whatever I was doing, whatever my thing was.
Singing and
you just
drumming.
Knew that that wasn't going to
yeah.
happen?
Yeah. I mean, definitely. That was part of it.
I'm so glad you said that about singing and drumming.
Uh-huh.
Because I think about that day and I didn't do any of that.
No, you didn't.
I thought that it would be a day where I'd be like humming to myself.
I did too.
Making up music, my like drumming on things, tapping yep. my feet. And I did not.
I thought that was deliberate. Not. Was that not deliberate?
No.
Interesting.
No, I didn't notice that until just now.
I remember thinking he's trying really hard not to sing and drum on things
no.
today.
No, I wasn't even thinking about it.
Wow.
But what I did do is I put my AirPods in and I put on like ambient music. You know, no words, no vocals, just like ambient, like relaxation, chill music kind of throughout the day for periods of the day. And it was just really like nice and
put you in a zen
put
place.
Me in a zen place.
Yeah.
And I didn't have that like da, 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 da. And the only time I listened to anything energetic was when I was actually practicing taekwondo. I went into mm-hmm. our studio and I practiced taekwondo for like 30 minutes and I put on like some like really energetic like drumming
yeah.
music, like Japanese taiko drums. And I like went to town.
That's cool.
And I just like got it all out
yeah.
in that room for 30 minutes. Like
that's
I
awesome.
Went off. I was like all over the place and then stepped out of the room and it was just
yeah.
back to zen.
You know, I didn't think of a vow of silence day would be a form of meditation.
Mm-hmm.
But of course it is. I mean, when I really think about it, well, yeah, of course it's a form of meditation, but it really felt like it. I don't know. If you felt this, I mean, I have a lot more practice meditating than you do, but it felt like I was able to quiet my mind and just, you know, you said there was a lot of silence, there was a lot of space to feel
mm-hmm.
your thoughts and what your body's telling you and all of that. Did you feel like your mind was quieter?
I spent a lot of that day journaling.
Yeah.
Like I spent a lot of that day journaling. So I didn't necessarily feel like my mind was quieter. It's just that my mind felt more focused.
Okay.
Right. I had like
ADD.
Less all over the place and more like it was like the words just kind of came to a point and I was like, I know just what to write.
But that to me feels like a quieter,
yeah.
you know, more focused brain
yeah.
feels like quieter. What about when you weren't journaling?
Yeah, I think I felt much calmer, much more even keeled. I tried to let my thoughts go where they may.
Sure.
In less of a, what are all the things I have to do today, blah, 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 like getting distracted by things. And I felt I had a lot more time to just be sitting there with my thoughts and letting my thoughts take me where they needed to go and kind of.
And in terms of.
We just meandered throughout the day.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
And in terms of your relationship with that moment.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, very much felt in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And present throughout the day. And I think that's partly why the time seemed to stretch, you know, because we were just not thinking about the next thing or five things we have to do. We were just thinking about the thing that we were doing in that moment.
Yeah. And like, it's interesting because, you know, you're a pure introvert, but I'm a social introvert. Like, I can only do it for like very limited social amounts of time, right? I actually like to be alone. I like having time alone, but I'm just a very energetic person. So people meet me and they're like, there's no way that person's an introvert. He's insane. But I'm like actually a big party, things like that. I hate that.
Yeah.
And so and it was again that idea that those monks had, this idea of finding solitude in community.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really beautiful.
Oh, I love that. Because if I just look at that phrase, solitude in community, that stresses me out. I'm like, I don't, you know, that means I'm connected and attached and obligated to all these people. And as an introvert, right, that that's just like, absolutely not. I just want to run away from that. But I felt that day. It was just the two of us, but I really felt connected to you, but at the same time, in complete solitude.
Yeah.
Which is why I say that I feel like I recharged that day.
Yeah.
In a way that I never have in the presence of others. So that was really cool. And a lot of it had to do with just feeling like I was being seen.
Yeah.
And we started to kind of, like you said, we didn't bump into each other after that one time. Our bodies started to sort of sync up. And
this is like the coolest thing that happened. Like, okay, so it's true. Like, as the day went on, our bodies just like literally got more and more in sync with each other. And it like, it's hard to describe. And like, it sounds like woo-woo and crazy and like out there. But like, I'm telling you, it was like the weirdest feeling. Because we bumped into each other that one time early, and then it felt like we just kind of navigated like, around the space. We're like revolving around each other throughout the day.
It for you theater people, it felt very much like a viewpoints exercise where this feels really woo-woo to non-theater people, but the group gets together and you're just kind of walking around in space and never touching, but just sort of like seeing how your bodies interact and respond in space. And it felt like that.
Yeah. There was like a moment in the day that was awesome when it was like true. Like it was like this beautiful blend of like being in the moment, but being really aware of who your partner is. It was so funny. Like we laughed. Like we just laughed and laughed when this happened.
Set it up?
Yeah. We were driving back from our hike. And I was driving and it was in, and we were about to go through a yellow light. And if you're one of these people, when you go through a yellow light, you like kiss your hand and then tap the dash. Emily does
it's
that
good luck.
All the time.
I do.
I do not do that. And we were going through the yellow light and I just did it. And we were like, perfect sync. It was like, boom, boom, like choreographed, and it was perfect. And it was just like this beautiful little moment of just
laughing.
Like, I know you.
I see you.
I see you. That was coming. And I was like, here it comes. Do it with her. And she knows that you're paying attention. And it was so like just lovely. It was
and you weren't waiting to see me start to do it.
No, I was just driving and just like, and it happened, and it was perfect. And
what blows my mind is how perfectly in sync it was.
And yeah, and it was just like from that moment, it was like, oh, we are locked in.
Yeah,
right. And later that day, we went and we actually practiced Taekwondo together, and this was fascinating because we're doing all these like defenses where we're actually like throwing punches at each other and having to defend them.
Yeah.
So you have to, you know, you can't mess around. You have to know when it's coming. You have to know what side it's coming from, what move you're doing, what move you're responding to. And somehow
we had to be really clear about which move we were doing, what side we were starting on. And in Taekwondo, there are nonverbal cues to let your partner know, sorry, not nonverbal, they're vocal cues. They're vocal cues to let the other person know that you're ready for the attack. Mm-hmm. And we weren't doing that. So we, I don't know,
we
came
did, like,
up with
these
this
little
nod.
Like head nod and then like locked eyes. And like that was when you knew it was, you were ready to go.
Yeah.
And we had to kind of figure that out. And the next morning we actually had Taekwondo. And yeah. like, again, we were in
still
sync. Like, we did our forms together and it was like beautiful. We yeah. were like just bam, like it was sharp, it was crisp, and we were like
in
it together, yeah. like mm-hmm. lockstep. And it was really amazing mm-hmm. how even the next day
yeah.
that was happening.
Well, when we were practicing it that night, I noticed we were more in sync mm-hmm. than any other time we've practiced those particular moves. Mm-hmm. And our spatial relationship to each other was more correct.
Mm-hmm.
I've been struggling lately in Taekwondo with keeping like the right distance in order to yeah. like block where I need to or get the punch. And it was so much easier.
Yeah.
We were just so aware of each other's bodies.
Yeah.
So that led to some dancing uh-huh. in our studio, some impromptu. You switched the music because you were just sort of listening to something light and jazzy, and you switched the music, and I thought you were playing capoeira music, and so I started.
Emma started to pretend to do capoeira, which was really amazing.
And I was just laughing, and I was like, he has no idea what I'm doing, but I think it's hilarious. And then I realized you were just looking for music to dance like normal people. And we did that.
Yeah.
And then
y'all, like, if you're wondering about all of this, because like, okay, let's be real. All of you are sitting there at home listening to this, like, yeah, but.
Did you do it? So this Esther Perel book is very much about.
Yeah.
Sex with couples.
Right. Stoking passion.
And, oh my God. And yeah. mating in captivity.
Right.
It's called. So we're fully aware that this exercise was a means to, you know, have body awareness so mm-hmm. we can be more physically in tune with each yeah. other. And my goodness.
Y'all, I don't want to say it was good because it was great.
It was like everything you want it to be.
Right.
And it was like spontaneous and there was variety involved and, you know, it kind of various things happened.
It was effective.
It was very effective. It was great. It was really wild.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll get into this more, I'm sure, at some point in future episodes, but we've kind of, you know, thumbed through the, what do you call it? The Kama Sutra.
Yeah, we've taken a perusal
through, you know, we definitely have not fully committed to that. But, you know, there's something to that. A lot of that doesn't involve words. It's just like breathing together mm-hmm. and obviously positions. But it felt very much like what that book was right. trying to encourage is being in sync with your partner.
Right.
And just intuiting what they want and what feels good.
Right.
And checking in, that was
okay.
This is so crazy.
Okay, because I made the connection to Taekwondo because literally right before that we'd been practicing Taekwondo and we had to figure out without words how to ask for and give consent,
uh-huh.
right? Because I can't just haul off and pretend to punch you in the face if you haven't given me the go ahead to try that, right?
Yeah.
And so we had just done this and then we were dancing and then all of a sudden like consent was asked for and consent was given without a word.
Yeah.
You know, and I think there's this stigma that, you know, people say like, well, just say what you want. Just state what you need. Just make your intentions known. And like, that's true. And that is good advice. But for some of us, and like you hear the flip side of like, well, that feels
really unromantic.
Like really unromantic and really dispassionate and really, but if you've spent a day building an awareness of each other physically, building space, building that connection, getting in tune with like what's going on.
Anticipating each other's needs
right.
and where they're at.
It was like, it was believable. It was like the closest thing to like early sex
that
there's been in, I think, a long time, because when, you know, when it's early, you're constantly like,
you're checking in,
checking in with that person. Like, ooh, what are they doing? Is that a thing? Is that a nod? Is that go ahead? And it feels really spontaneous. It's not spontaneous.
But there's actually quite a bit of nonverbal cueing there. Hopefully.
Yeah.
Right. If everything is consensual, in fact.
Right.
And, you know, and it becomes less sexy. And as we get involved in our day-to-day lives and have jobs and mortgages and kids, maybe it's like, you know, it's easy to lose track of that being in tune with the other person. And this day was like laser focus and just trusting each other.
Did it pay it off in the end?
Oh, did it ever?
Multiple times.
I'm blushing.
And
yeah, it was great.
You know, however it continued, what was hilarious is at the end of it, you know, it, like midnight, we go to bed. We haven't spoken all day. And that still continued. At 3:30 in the morning, we both were like wide awake at the same time.
That was an interesting side effect.
And I was like,
the lack of sleep.
Yeah. It was like after a day of silence, like, I don't know. It's like, there was so much energy. I don't know. I was just awake.
Me too.
And I wasn't uncomfortable. I wasn't too hot. I didn't feel badly. I just was awake. And I was sitting there in bed. I was like, I really have to go up and go to the bathroom. And right as I thought that, you got up and went to the bathroom. And then you got back and I had to go. And then,
like, Nate never has to go. I never have to go
in the middle of the night. And it was just like fascinating because we were both up at the same time. Our body functions were like going at the same time.
Yeah.
And then the next morning we did Taekwondo and that was all happening in the same, like, it was just really crazy. The after effect of it really stretched out beyond just the period of silence, which I think is intentional. I think that's a part of that practice is that it stretches out beyond just the period of silence.
So we take that attentiveness, awareness of ourself and the other's self, and we make our daily lives with words better.
Yeah. So, I mean, this, I think, was a really good exercise, amazing exercise.
Yeah, we've done other exercises before, and we've done the things, and those are great. This is completely different.
It was wild.
I mean, because all the other exercises we've done involve words.
Right.
This was so interesting.
Right. And in COVID, you're sick of talking to each other. You feel bored. Yeah. You feel stuck. Oh, my God.
Highly recommend it.
Worth it. You know, we're going to try to incorporate it into our just lives more often.
Every
week.
Know? It doesn't seem practical, but I want to do it every week.
Because it was just really valuable. And I think there's people, you know, if you think about a relationship and if you think about, well, gosh, it would be really, I can't spend a whole day not talking to my partner. That would be really hard. I mean, your relationship is so much more than the words that you speak to each other. Lao Tzu has a poem about this idea that pots are formed from clay, but the empty space is the essence of the pot.
It's lovely.
And I love that, right? It's like the empty space and the space we exist with each other and that we navigate together. That is the essence of us. It's not just the words. It's not the I love yous. It's not the things I say. It is the actions. It is the awareness. It is the space. It is the connection.
A vessel without the space.
Exactly.
It makes me think about our wedding picture, a little that we got when we got married, that Southwestern, I can't remember what tribe makes, it's this gorgeous thing.
So it's like a Navajo wedding vase.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it just made me think of that, of it has these two openings and there's this empty space.
Yeah. And we're both filling that space.
Yeah.
But without that space in there, we can't.
There is no pot.
There's no wedding vase. Yeah. And so, you know, there's Emily found this John Grossman quote.
I love this so much.
Go ahead.
I love this so much because it's hugely profound and it's like right up my alley. But I think it encompasses everything that we experienced that day. And the quote is, "Silence is not the absence of something, but the presence of everything."
And I think we'll leave it with that.
Yeah.
Because I think we've given this enough words.
So go out and shut
Be
up.
Be quiet. Shut your mouth hole.
Give it a try. We really want to hear
about it. Yeah, and let us know if you try it, how it goes.
Oh
what
gosh.
Do you experience? We want to hear
All
about
the details.
It.
Absolutely. We wanna, if you we'll tell you ours if you tell us yours.
Yeah, exactly. So get some peace and quiet, everyone.
Yeah.
Enjoy it.
Thanks for tuning in.
We'll see
in.
You next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Twice as Less Not Perfect.
Want to hear more about what it takes to have a messy marriage? Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
And share us with your friends and family.
You can follow us on all the socials. Find us on Facebook at Messy Marriage Podcast.
And Instagram at A Messy Marriage Podcast.
Have a question or an idea for an episode? Email us at lessnotperfect@gmail.com.
And remember, when it comes to marriage,
mess is more.